listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Your Ultimate Life tonight. And I'm so excited to be with you today. This is the place where you can learn about purpose, prosperity, and joy, and learn how to create the life of your dreams. Tonight, I've got a special guest, Marta Tchaikovska. Marta, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're absolutely welcome. So I don't do an intro on the show. Everything that you do, which is a ton of really cool stuff, is going to come out during the show. But this is a pretty exciting time for you right this minute. And why don't you tell us why Marta is so excited right now? What's happening in Marta's life?
Yeah, this is a huge day for me. About 20 years ago, I had a thought that I think I want to write a book about all my adventures. And it only took me 20 years of procrastination and psyching myself out to finally sit down with myself in January of this year and saying, okay, I'm calling BS on all this, and I'm actually going to sit down and do this thing. And as I sat down in March, because of whatever travel I had, finally in March, I sat down to write the book. I had my first draft done in June, and I was like, oh my God, like that's what it takes. It's just decision, making a decision and doing the thing. And so as of tomorrow, the book is live and published, and it came a full circle at this point for me.
So a 20-year circle, and I am so excited for you. And the thing on your screen there says Masters of Badassery, and I happen to know that's the name of the book. So by way of beginning to introduce our listeners to you and everything that you're doing and who you are and who you've been and the story that they might find in Masters of Badassery, because this show's about helping people do things they don't believe they can do and create that ultimate life stuff. So tell us a little bit about this book and this journey and why you picked that name and what it means to you and the truth that is embodied in that description.
Yeah. So I started a coaching company a few years ago called Masters of Badassery. And this came from my client. I made this big plan with a client to do a year long progression into her climbing a big mountain, doing coaching and climbing. And she said, oh my God, I feel like I've enrolled in a program, almost like a university program called Masters of Badassery. And so she started this. And then when I was writing the book, I have to say that in January, when I decided to write a book, I had a loose idea of what the book's going to be about. And at some point, I was digging holes in my garden and planting some trees. And I was literally digging a hole. And I went, oh, my God, I know what this book is about. I know exactly what this is about. This is for people who don't believe that their dreams are worth following. This is for people that might feel life force coming through them and desires and yearning, and they decide, nah, this is not for me. This is for other people. This is for successful people. This is for people from good homes, from happy families, or people that have opportunity. Because this was my life story. I didn't have any of these things, but I had the yearning and I had the desire. And against all odds, I decided to follow it, even though I didn't have any skills and I was scared and all of these things. And so as I'm in the hole digging, I realized that is the book that my being needs to bring into the world.
So let's get clear about this. You said a year-long journey of both coaching, which is personal transformation, but wrapped in the blanket of climbing mountains. So I've had the chance to read your book, and I can tell you that as I listened to your voice and read the words describing some of the mountain climbing, for those that you don't know this, that, you know, she's a mountain climber up in the rarefied air of scary shit. And so tell us a little bit about how this climbing of mountains, this physical challenge and facing, you know, death, physical danger and death, literally like you watch on TV, that kind of stuff, is a crucible of questions and answers, both physically, emotionally, and spiritually, that led you to both jump into this when you were young and drag this thread all the way through your life in such a way that it has now become an attractive beacon for others, that you help discover their own mountain that they won't not climb.
I love that. For me, as a young person who was struggling in the world, I had kind of stood at this crossroad where I was like, well, I don't like what's happening in my parents' life and the normal life, 9 to 5 sort of life. And I also didn't have any alternative for this. So as many young people do, I turn into stuff that's not good for you. And I was so lucky at some point to a friend told me about rock climbing. And the moment I heard about rock climbing, I decided this is my life. I need to go try this thing. And not even I need to go try this thing. I'm going to do this thing, right? So this is the wisdom of the 15-year-old that has brought me into first moving, arriving at 18 years old in Yosemite Valley to climb the biggest wall there is to climb in the world at the time, right? Without much skill, I would say, but with a lot of enthusiasm and drive. And then I followed that thread all through my adult life, organizing my life around climbing. So there was always where I live is because there's good climbing. What I do on my free time is climbing. I have a practice of climbing 3 days a week, and I've had it for almost 30 years now. So I didn't really think there was much in it other than my personal growth, because I come up against my edge in climbing all the time. In climbing, I see myself clearly, and I can't BS myself about what I'm doing because it comes out and is very clean and clear. So as I was doing this with myself and thinking, oh, this is just for me, I stumbled onto another yearning that showed up in my life, another desire that was to not just to live for myself. And I didn't know what to do with this. I was like, I didn't think I had, like, my book is all about this. I didn't think I had a gift to bring to the world. And it took me a while to figure that out. At some point, I met with a friend who's a coach, and I said to him, you know, I think, like, I would really want to try becoming a coach, but I don't know, who am I to do this thing, right? There are so many other people who are, you know, have more, I don't know, that would be better to do this than me. And he looked at me, and it was one of the most beautiful moments of my life. He looked at me and he goes, these people didn't just spend 30 years on the side of the mountain. And so to me, that was that little push that I needed into stepping into putting myself out there and seeing what my wisdom and my unique being can bring to the world as a service.
So I love that. And you do it in many, many unique ways. One of the questions I like to ask that makes, you know, a guest, you in this case, think, without being modest at all, because I'm asking you not to be, how would you say that Marta adds good to the world?
Yeah. I met with a pretty much a random person this week. Started the conversation by saying, hey, treat this hour as if it was the most important hour of your life, because you happen to talk to me and I'm brilliant. And I just said this, and the old me could have never said that, right? I said this, and she said, I can't believe you just said that. I want to say this about me. So we spent the whole hour of her talking about how brilliant she is, which is something that she's never said before. Right? So for me, the way I bring value into the world is by deep listening and by deep presence and by leading by example of seeing where it is that we're scared to go, right at that edge of what we think is possible or safe or whatever, and going, well, let's just peek over there and see what's behind that ridge, right? And once we peek behind the ridge, what happens to people is everything opens up. And maybe not all at once, but at least you're going to look over that one ridge. And you might be surprised, anyone who's listening, when you decide to peek over the ridge beyond your comfort zone, what becomes possible to you and your life. And I'm saying you might be surprised, but Kellen, you and I know what becomes possible, which is a life of embodied love, peace, wisdom, and fulfillment.
What is it, do you think, that makes this, you know, we talk about peace, love, fulfillment, and all that stuff, and people say, yeah. What is it about getting to this edge? And I love the way you use that word, and even the way you chew that word is an interesting way, and it feels like an edge. What is it about getting to that edge and then either backing away, abandoning yourself from, you know, out of fear at the edge, or peeking over? What is it about that makes us so excited if we peek over? What is that that creates this liberation moment? You said, what's possible? And the way you said that was as if there was some magic view, and there is. But what is it about meeting ourselves at that edge that creates that?
Yeah, the view is magnificent. The way I look at this, the simplest way I can describe it is that at heart, at the core, we're all limitless. We're unwounded and unwoundable, and we are each everything in the world. Yet, by our culture, the way we grow up, by set of things that happen to us throughout our life, we start limiting the way we see ourselves. And in extreme cases, it's a person who, let's say, is scared to get out of their house, right? This is extreme limitation of the way a person feels about their life, who they are. They identify with a tiny little thing, right? And so when we go and we decide that we're going to get out of the house and look outside, not only do we see a lot more, but we also see that we were wrong limiting ourselves. And now we have a proof that the thinking that we had about ourselves was likely really wrong, right? And that can further liberate us into seeing the whole big picture, the whole 360 view.
Tell me a story. I want you to tell me a story about a climb that you went on where you met yourself at an edge, maybe that had scared you before or even, you know, defeated you before temporarily, and you chose to go there and then were able to catch that vista and do something you didn't expect to start with. Tell me a story about that.
Yeah, man, so many stories. The first one that comes to mind is when I first showed up in Yosemite as a young person. Everybody, all the climbers come to Yosemite wanting to climb El Cap. That's the biggest thing, right? And so I remember actually showing up and looking up El Cap and going, ooh, maybe not. This thing is so big, right? Maybe I don't really want to be a rock climber. But that was just this funny little thing that often we'll feel, right, when we are actually facing our vision. But I attempted, and I had numerous attempts in finding a partner. First, some partners, canceled, and I didn't have any skills, so I was basically just trying to find someone who will take me and teach me. And then I went up with a friend, and he actually ended up falling and hurting himself, and so we had to go down. Then I found some other guy, and we went up there, and he ended up falling and not really hurting himself, but he ended up falling, getting spooked. And I was like, well, I can do this thing alone. And he was like, negative, no, we're not doing this. We're not going up there where you are the only person who's, you know, in the mindset of climbing this thing. El Cap takes from three, well, for a normal person, it takes anywhere from 3 to 7 days, right? So he's like, no, we're not going up there. And so when I finally found someone who would go out there with me, and I made agreements about this, I said, I don't want to be taken up at rock climb. I want to contribute my equal part into leading this rock climb. And so I ended up having the most amazing journey in overcoming myself in, climbing all of, leading all of my pitches, which leading is the harder part, right? And a funny thing happened on this trip, actually. As I was climbing, I was pretty slow. I was very beginner at this type of climbing, this expert kind of climbing. I was very beginner. And as I'm climbing and as I'm leading, I'm a little slower than maybe some people. I'm definitely super self-conscious about being slow. And I see that there is this these people that are catching up really quickly to us. And on a big wall, having someone pass you you don't want to do this. So I'm starting to get nervous. Oh my God, these guys are going to pass us. And then I start looking closer and turns out they are not really climbing. They're cheating. They have a tent pole and they are skipping all the difficulties and clipping up and basically cheating their way up the wall. And I see how they're doing this and I'm like, oh, I know what I'm going to do. And so I took some tape and I taped all the ways that they could clip themselves up the wall, which didn't prevent them obviously from climbing it. They just had to actually come to the place instead of trying to reach through it. And so I taped all the way for them to cheat. And then we never saw them again.
Did that feel good because you made them do the real deal?
It was good because I realized that I was powerful, that I wasn't at the mercy of someone. And I didn't have to think lesser of myself or that I was slow or any of that, right? I was like, oh, I am creating my experience here, you know?
Yeah, yeah. What is it about, we use that word in coaching a lot, we create our lives, we create the experience of our lives every day. If you think about a client story or someone that you've helped in this context, what is one of the first things that has to happen in order for me to shift my thinking from this horrible world or this horrible disaster or this horrible piece of granite is not cooperating, it's happening to me instead of the realization, which is that you do in fact create your experience. What is, mm-hmm. Talk me through some of the first things that have to happen for me to shift that approach.
Right. So, yeah, the first thing that we always have to start with in shifting that is ownership. I came here, in other words, nobody teleported me into this place on El Cap, right? I chose to come here, right? And it's funny because it's so simple, but yet so many people trip over that first part, right? Being here and being unhappy, right, is extending in line and going, I can't believe this drive up line is so long, right? Like, I chose to come here, right? That would be the very first ownership of our actions, right? And then the second thing that needs to happen is, for me, when the things get hard, is understanding that I am doing this and there's learning here for me. So in this experience that I'm doing that might be difficult, I get to grow and I get to learn, right? And so all of a sudden, for example, I have a client who started online dating and she hasn't dated in 10 years. She had a lot of anxiety, getting herself out there and going on dates and all this stuff. And we worked on this and I was just talking to her today and she said, oh my God, you wouldn't believe how fun it is for me to go online dating. I decided that instead of trying to find a person who I'm going to fall in love with, that's going to save my life, I am going to go and be present with what happens and be present with myself and expand how I'm showing up in relationships. And all of a sudden now she is loving it, right? She actually coached one of my friends on online dating.
And you know what's interesting is that entire drama every time takes place up here. Like nothing happened, right? Like the walls didn't turn blue or the sky wasn't orange or whatever. Like nothing happened. The whole dance is in our heads or hearts. You know, we create this dance. And coming to that realization that you are choosing this is such a powerful place to get to, you know, in this journey. So if you think about the last year or so of the people that you have helped, and I want you to do two things. Well, let me start with a story. Tell me a story about someone that is remarkable, something that has changed in their life. And I said past year, but it doesn't really matter, where they have either they've made some of these discoveries about owning their own life and making choices. And I want you to tell me what is different for them. So they started in one place and you helped them not abandon themselves or realize they have both the capacity, the obligation, and all that stuff to create their lives. What changed after or as you helped them make those realizations?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's two pieces to this question. One is, what is through the process of work, how does the person change internally, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the big thing. And then also, what are the what shows up in the outside world, right? How does this actually, from the outside, if you're gonna see, go, huh, that's different, right?
Right.
This is why coaching is so amazing, right? Because I get to see this really, really, really every day. But I saw a client today that I used to work with maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And she literally came to me. And when I did my initial intake, she's a lovely, awesome person. But when I did my initial intake, she was so depressed. And I asked her, this is often we ask this question. Was there a time that you can remember that you felt energized, alive, that you felt engaged in your life? And she said, oh, yeah, when I'm on drugs. And I was like, all right, well, at least we have honesty. This is a great place to start, right? So this is where she was. Her life force, her willingness to live was so dimmed that she couldn't even remember a time where she felt alive in the last few years, right? She's like, it was drugs, but I don't do them anymore. So now I don't get to feel alive, right?
Right, right.
So starting in that place, it can be a little slow for people because they have gotten used to seeing themselves as a victim of their circumstances, and they don't know they have any way, any power of getting themselves out of there, right? And so the work in the beginning is a lot of self-awareness. I feel like this, I'm thinking like this, right? So for them to understand that their thoughts create their feelings and they're looking at a certain thing from only one side and not from numerous sides, right? And then they become addicted in their nervous system, right? Our nervous system is a living thing. And the more we do something, the better we become at it, right? They say, do something 10,000 times, you're going to be an expert. Well, if for 10,000 times you tell yourself you have no zero effect on what happens in your life, you're going to believe it and you're going to live as if this was truth. And so what needs to happen in the initial time is a rewiring of the nervous system and showing your nervous system that there's other possibilities. Actually, there's 10,000 ways that we can look at any single situation. And with that, as the reality stops being a tunnel,
right,
and starts being a vista, now all of a sudden there's so much more opportunity to show up in the world in different ways. When this happens internally, externally, it might look like a person starting a business. It might look like them getting a divorce. It might look like really following their passion of whatever thing. It happened to my mom. This is the stories in the book. And it's one of my favorite stories, how my mom at 67 years old decided to change her life and rewire her nervous system. And so you guys will have to read the book to learn about how my mom did this at 67.
That's fantastic. And I love the detail and the thought that you put into that. So when you first started, you had the question, who am I to be this person to go help people? Who am I to do that? And it reminds me of what you said about climbing the wall. I'm showing up. I'm a beginner. I mean, I've done some climbing, but nothing like, yeah, real climbing. Okay, here I am. And the same thought, who am I to coach? Who am I to help people? To what you expressed earlier. So now I'm asking you, okay, now a few years later, Marta, who are you to do that?
Yeah. I am the embodied presence of having walked that walk, right? So I've witnessed my journey in all of the steps, and the journey isn't all pleasant. The journey can be very, very difficult. Up to this day, my journey is difficult. But for me, I am a person who meets it with love and compassion and self-compassion. And through that, I learned how to be present. And the presence of who I am in welcoming it all, right? And not turning away from certain things and not running away from difficulty, and also not erasing my brilliance, but embracing all the things, is something that when I'm in presence, and some of you are feeling this right now, and you're obviously also feeling it from Kellen, when you're in the presence of something, someone like that, something in you gets to open by pure me modeling this frequency to you. So that's what I do, and this is who I am.
That is who you are. And I thank you for saying that. And I know that the question is, it is whatever it is. And it was intended to have you work through that, the language, because that truth, the ability that you have, and I read it as I read the book and your description of not turning away. You use the words in abandoning yourself in as a reference in the book in various places. And that struck me as I read it, because we know we have a sense of who we could be or what we could do. And then we abandon that truth for comfort or for safety or out of fear or for story or a bunch of other reasons. And choosing not to do that and witnessing and participating fully in those emotions and in that feeling is such a gift that you bring. And I absolutely hope everybody that's listening reads your story. I can tell you it's amazing. I have a different, I want to change directions. What is it about our world that we have built that seems to cram everybody in this negative place, so that everybody somehow, whether they want to do it or not, sits in this place of I'm not good enough, I can't do this, I'm not this, I'm not that, you know, this big long list of nots. And I realize not everybody's there, but most. What is it about this life, this world that we've created, that puts us all behind 15 eight balls to start with?
Yeah. There's probably many, many ways of looking at this. And so I can only speak to the way I look at this from, is that the huge disconnection that happens with nature for 99.9% of humans on Earth. We evolved in really close quarters with nature and on natural time. And in being in oneness with nature, right? We're way removed from it, right? The food comes from the cupboard. If you are a man, the food comes from the cupboard. This is an inside joke, but the food comes from the supermarket, right? And so we have sped up expectations. We go to schools, and the school teaches us to be a certain way, and this is the only one way to be, and it evaluates us. And it flattens our being into something that you need to be just like everyone else in order to be loved and be accepted, right? And so we all try to contort ourselves into that thing that we're told we're going to belong, right? And at the same time, we don't witness the natural belonging that happens in nature, where things just are. And for centuries, that's taught us this other thing. So I think there's a lot to be discovered when we just go into nature and see how these ideas are simply not true. So every being in nature has, the word I use for this is ecological niche. A frog does something in nature, so does the bug, and so does the wolf, right? As a human being now, we are disconnected from it. We don't know. We haven't been initiated into our own personal ecological niche. And this is the work that I love to do with people, which is go into, this is the work that I have done, right? When a friend told me, you sat on the mountain for 30 years, right? You have something to give. So each of us can do that kind of work with a coach or without a coach. But it really comes into deeply listening to our gifts and talents and doing the work of trusting and then manifesting into action, right? We have to trust, but then we also have to take action because we're embodied and our life happens in action.
And we have to go to that edge and then actually peek over and not retreat, right? We go to the edge and then get too scared and retreat and pull back.
And just a note with that, because I just worked with someone today, so it's up top of my mind. For some people that have experienced a lot of nervous system trauma, that have experienced a lot of difficulty, that going to the edge might just take a little longer, and that's okay. There is nothing wrong with it. So we can only do that at the speed of our nervous system, and our nervous system needs time to rewire. So you're never behind as long as you're in motion towards it.
I love that. And thank you for making that clear, because one of the things I think contributes to this, I'm going to call it a disease, but this unnatural contortion of our lives is this comparison business and the, you know, the rise in the last 20 years of social media and the availability of 24/7 news and comparison, and you're supposed to have this and do that and everything else, just makes that worse and worse and worse and worse. And your observation that for you and for me and for each person listening, the speed of your development or the speed of your growth is whatever it is. And whatever it is exactly right. And so the idea that you need to be in the same place or do the same things as someone else is part of the poison that keeps people from making that growth. So I want to, you said something there, you can do it by yourself or you can do it with a coach. Is that actually true? Do we do very well by ourselves?
I say this for many reasons, because I do believe that we have the innate power to do so. I do. And there is, regardless of where you are in the world right now, information is available. So nobody needs to hire me or hire you or hire some other coach. However, it becomes so much faster and it becomes so much easier when we actually have someone, right? And back in the day, we had mentors or we had elders, right? Our culture doesn't have elders really anymore. We have people that are older, right? But they haven't gone through the whole hero's journey. And so having someone who actually has, and my experience is that coaching world is especially incredible at this, because coaching world is Wild West and people sink or swim. And so, and that makes it really, it takes the people that made it. And that means that these people have done the work most of the time. So for me, coaching world is really an incredible place, to have grown into the full expression of myself, and share it with others. And I think that, like I say, it's faster, but I think it can be 100 times faster, 1,000 times faster, it's actually a lot faster. It's not twice as fast, right? So I am fully sold on coaching. I think coaching is the fastest way for us to achieve what we want in life.
So thank you for saying that, because nothing you here listening right now have the ability to make a tenth of a percent or 0.2 or 1% shift or change. Just owning the idea that you own your life, owning the idea that you can look at a situation differently. That shift alone is a beginning. And reading a book or watching videos and, you know, making small changes on purpose is a place to begin. And when you decide you have the availability and possibility to, you want to do something faster and you want to make it happen, you want some time compression and you want to avoid a few of the slides down the rock that Marta has 1,000 stories about, you know, a few of those kinds of things, then finding someone who's been there and who's walked that path and is willing to anchor and to guide is a way to do time compression. So thank you for making both of those points. So I'm going to ask you something. You said something about your mom making this significant change for her and reinventing herself later in life. I want you to talk about that a little bit, not necessarily about her, but the idea that sometimes keeps people from making changes that they yearn to make or feel nudged to make or look at longingly, that it's too late or I've this too, you know, this has happened, that's happened, I can't because... And, you know, yabbit, you know, all of that sort of thing. And, you know, you've heard me say that before, yabbit. And it reminds me of Bugs Bunny, you know, wabbit. But anyway, talk about this idea of too lateness. Like, I can't because it's too late because. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, I love this because what it really is our fear will use any excuse it can get its hands on, right? So someone can say, I'm too old, which a lot of people are saying. And then, but then many people are saying, I'm too young. And I'll give you an example from my life. When I first talked to my friend coach that I just mentioned, I said, you know, listen to this. Everybody will know this was an excuse. I think I'll be a more effective coach when I'm older, right? So I was creating excuses because becoming a coach was making me uncomfortable, right? And so what we always, always do is first comes the emotional state. Let's say in this case, when we look at growth, I am afraid to grow. And then we'll use any excuse that we can. And a lot of them are, I am too old, right? I am not tall enough. I don't live in the right place. I've heard someone say recently, well, you live in the United States, so it's like this, but I live in Netherlands, so I can't, right? So to me, this is all a list of excuses that is completely irrelevant, that has nothing to do with reality, because what we're going after is that we are basically reinforcing the fear that drives us. So if anyone is in this situation, there's a really, really easy technique that you can use when you start saying, okay, I'm too old, I can't do this, right? And so all of you that are thinking this, please try something else on and go, what is the 20 reason why I can do this? And now you're turning your mind completely around. And if you actually do this exercise, you're going to discover things your mind never thought of before. And they're just as true.
That's such a key point, because we believe whatever we believe. Like, we have a set of automatic beliefs that come from our past experience and stuff we've heard and experienced and everything else. And the minute we ask, actually stop, okay, I think all that, that's fine. What else could I believe? Like, what's 1 or 10 or 15 reasons why I can do this or why it might work? It does something. It's not just a distraction. It is a shift in chemistry and focus. And we start looking at something completely differently. And so I love that you did that, because it really happens. The chemistry changes. Different stuff happens in your head. Well, what if I could? You know, well, what's a reason that I could do this or that I should do this anyway, even if I'm going to look silly or waste some time or money or whatever it is?
So, and to recognize that the moment, like even the moment that I suggested that, someone might have felt a lot of resistance. No, I couldn't possibly start thinking about the reasons why I can. And just recognizing, oh, yeah, I have resistance. This is probably a really good place for me to follow because there is something in here that is a little fishy.
I love that. And anybody that's read Stephen Pressfield's books, you know, about the artist's journey and turning pro and all that stuff, he personifies a thing called the resistance, right, that we experience. And he talks about it like it's a thing. And I love that. And just that feeling of if you're feeling that thing, then that's definitely a place, that's a rock you should turn over and say, what's under that rock and why am I feeling this? So I want you to now, I've sort of led this and asked different questions to pull different stories out of you and things like that. I want to give you an opportunity now. What's something that you really want to say about your book, about your own journey, about your coaching practice, about your vision for the world, like something I didn't ask you that you would like to just like talk about and be passionate about for a minute.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for this. For me, like I said, going back to the moment when I was in the hole, digging the hole, and I had the epiphany of what so far my life's work has been about. I consider, you know, I grew up in communist Poland. There was not a lot of opportunity in my world. There was not a lot of example of people doing cool things or things out of their comfort zone. It was everybody was doing the same thing. And the culture was such that you had to, right? And so I am not special. There's nothing special about me, although as I told you, I am brilliant, but so are you, and so is everyone, right? And so we all have that in us, the potential to live our life the way we want to and experience expansion and limitlessness. Everybody has that in them. Unfortunately, 99.9% of people get stuck right when we've been talking about and go, when they look at the big wall, they say, no, that's not for me, right? Or I don't ride a bike, right? Or, oh, no, I couldn't learn another language. Or, at 3 years old, I decided, or at 5 years old, I decided I'll never sing, right? So this is the stories that we tell ourselves. And maybe going back to what you were asking about being too old, being older just means you've been telling yourself these stories longer. So your nervous system is more fused in believing these stories. But one, they're completely untrue. They're just ways that your fear gives reasoning, right? And two, the moment you cross over, and you don't have to arrive at the end point, like I want to be famous or whatever, but the moment you cross out of your inertia and out of listening to your excuses into considering expansion, considering experiencing yourself as bigger, for lack of a better word, more resilient, more loving, more limitless than you thought, you start feeling good. Now you get into a positive feedback loop of your nervous system where all of a sudden colors are beautiful and food tastes better. And this is our body chemicals that you start creating in that moment. So it's never too late, because the moment you cross over, you start experiencing life completely different. And one thing I want to say here is that often the argument I hear from people is, yeah, but I have family to look after. I have kids. I couldn't possibly follow my dreams. I have responsibilities. I have to put food on the table, right? So this is often like how people position this. And something that I think is absolutely necessary right now in the world is as models, and that includes me, I'm not a parent, but any of you that are parents, I think our biggest job is to model love for life to the young people and to everyone else around, because it is possible, and all it takes is trying it and repeating it. And so when I coach my parents that I work with, we focus a lot. Obviously, kids need to be taken care of and everything is fine, but also go and do the thing that lights you up, because what you're teaching everyone around you and your kids is that life is awesome. Life is beautiful. Life is joyful. And if you don't show it to them, they won't know. They'll think life is 9 to 5 in traffic, right?
I love that, because it is true. If you have kids and you have obligations and you're taking care of grandma or whatever it is, you do. And no one, neither Marta or I or anyone else, is trying to say you don't have to do those or you don't have to run away from them. You've signed up for them, and that's fine. The thing that I'm taking from what you just said is it is your choice how you show up to do those things. So if you have a kid you're taking care of, or a job that you are in right this minute isn't your favorite thing to do, if you choose to show up all in and love your life, love the fact that it provides whatever it provides, you not only model a different thing, but you create a different internal experience for your nervous system. Because you're going into the thing like you can choose to do it, instead of like resentment. That's why I separate the word commitment from obligation. And one of the things I talk a lot about is have no obligations. The idea of obligation creates the seeds of resentment, because as soon as you say I'm obligated, it's like I'd rather be doing something else. And that chemistry is already the poison. So if you're going to do it anyway, then lean in and do it. All right. So I want you to now tell us where we can find more, Marta. Like, where do we go to follow you, to find more? The book is going to be right away on Amazon. If it's already there, I think. So it's up on Amazon, Masters of Badassery. And I recommend it highly. I've read it and love it. Where else? What else do people need to do if they want some more Marta?
Yeah, the book is coming out tomorrow. You can go to Amazon and just type in Masters of Badassery and it will come up. So that's a great starting point. My website is Masters of Badassery. This is where you can come in and see what I do, what kind of awesome adventures I do with people, climbing and coaching. We do some really outrageous, amazing things. So that's same name, Masters of Badassery is my website. And same thing on Instagram, I'll get connected, get in a conversation. I do a lot of great things with groups, and I offer a bunch of free things that are affordable to anyone. So you have to show up for yourself and invest your time and life force. But those are great places to start.
Thank you. And I wanted just the final question I have is, what didn't I ask you or give you a chance to talk about? What would be your final thing to tell me, teach me, as I sit here listening to you?
I think what I've been reflecting on lately, as I did the work of writing the book and I mined my experience for things and that I learned and I experienced in my life, what I saw is that I often try to evaluate my life based on the short time frame, and I'll be like, well, that sucks. I don't like this. This is not working for me. And when I did the work of writing the book and I read back the stories and the things that happened to me, I was amazed at the mastery that my life has been. That there is things that might be happening. What it teaches me is that there's things that are happening right now that I don't yet understand how they're going to shape me in the highest possible way. And so when I get into that mindset, any sort of hardship that I experience, I'll have it be self-imposed or something I stumble into becomes sort of like a puzzle piece and a mystery. Like, oh, I wonder where this is going to take me. And so it really helps me sort of uncrash from, that's a term I use in my book, but uncrash from like trying to evaluate my current circumstances into a place of openness, creativity, and wonder, you know?
I love that. Marta, I want to thank you for being so vibrant, so loving, so open, so encouraging. And I truly want you to take the opportunity to go there, but so to go and follow her. So anyway, thanks for being here with me today.
Thank you, Kellen. It's been awesome. Really fun talking to you.
Fantastic. So I really want you to buy that book. Oh, man. The stories in there will blow your mind. And her own journey is incredible. And I want you to know it is never too late. I don't care where you've been or what's happened to you. You can move forward. You can get that benefit that she was just describing there at the end. That will weave a tapestry of power and beauty in your life and help you move forward, no matter where you are now, to create and enjoy your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.